Christmas is not over, for me certainly at least, until we celebrate Nullagnamon, or Women's Christmas, which falls on Tuesday. Its origins can be traced back to the custom of honouring women, especially those who are very busy with Christmas celebrations, and a day when women would take a break from their domestic duties and let the men take over the household duties as they relax in the company of their female relatives and friends. But does Nullagnamon have any relevance in the Ireland of today? To discuss this, we have invited our panellists along, Reverend Dr. Noreen Nurain, who is an Interfaith minister, theologian, and an internationally acclaimed spiritual singer. You are very, very welcome. We're also joined by Catherine Persisco, writer, columnist, whose latest novel, This Is How You Remember It, is out now, and businesswoman Andrea Horn, who is the creator of Tropical Popical Nail Bar and a long-serving activist. You're all very, very welcome.
Thank you.
I might start with you, Noreen, because I think, did you recently become a grandmother?
I did, and I love this feast. It's just great to be talking about it, because actually I always connect this feast not just with Nullagnamon, but maybe with parents too. Nullag na dúish mhóirí. That, you know, today is a celebration of women, yes, and we get together and that's wonderful. But I also think of parenthood at this time, because, of course, when you look at the theological side of it then, that you, this is the birth of Christ and Mary, the divine feminine, the kings coming to the
three wise men.
The three wise men. And I always think it's a time for us to be three wise men ourselves and to go maybe to a family of young, that have a young people. Because my two sons, they have small children. But honestly, it's so difficult. You know, we forget it when you come 50 years later.
Did you celebrate it much in your family when you were younger?
We did, because my mother's people used to celebrate, not so, but they would call it Little Christmas, and they'd have a goose, that would be the third goose that they'd have on this day. But of course, it's outdated now, really, when you talk about men, you know, giving you a day off, because really most couples, I think that sort of changed in my generation, are equal now in the household and equal with family rearing.
So, Catherine, I know it's fiercely practiced still in many rural and coastal communities. There'd be lots of people out swimming on Tuesday morning. Did you celebrate it as a big tradition in here in the capital?
Not so much, but it's something that kind of came more into my life when I was in college, and some of my friends would kind of get together, you know, chat, have a bottle of wine, have dinner, whatever it is. So for me then, it kind of is more about, I suppose, like solidarity between women, maybe not necessarily to do with my like parental relationships, my family relationships, but kind of on like a lateral level, getting together with women and talking about our experiences.
And for you, Andrea, was it something that was celebrated or something you were quite aware of when you were younger?
It wasn't really something we celebrated, I'd say, but I think what I am noticing, the rise of it coming back, is as we're tapping more into our pagan roots and people like Monca McGann, who are bringing us back to the land and making us kind of move with seasons and nature, etc. I think that's bringing us back to the feeling of Nullagnamon, as bypassing maybe religion a little bit more now.
Yeah, absolutely. Did the women in your family come together, Noreen? Like, I mean, was there, you know, did they honour that tradition?
I suppose they would have, Andrea, picking up on your point there, I think that's so important, to try now to reinterpret religion in a new way. And so we'll say the Epiphany, they would all have gone to Mass, because of course the Epiphany is what's known, and Epiphany is a Greek word for that James Joyce used an awful lot actually in his writings. It just means a spiritual manifestation, an explosion of something unusual in your life, you know? And I think we need to retrieve that now, that this was a marvellous time of the three kings led by a star, of course, and we're so connected now with the Orion Belt and Sirius and the stars in the sky when we look up, you know. And then, of course, the baptism of Christ, which was also celebrated this time. There were three miracles celebrated theologically. The baptism of Christ, changing of the water into wine. And of course, all that was started by Mary. It was Mary that said, listen, you better do your first miracle here. So I think if she hadn't done that, probably there wouldn't have been any miracles.
Did you ever find it a patronising experience? I kind of read a lot around this time of year where some women are kind of rejected and saying it's old and patronising. Or was there just something lovely actually about honouring the women for you?
Ah, yes. And as I say, it's honouring parenthood too. And looking at, of course, being a grandmother now, or a mammo, as we say in Irish, which is a much nicer name than granny, being a mammo has brought me back now to seeing how difficult it is to be a parent. And it's actually heroic you know. And I was only talking about to my son, he's in America, and talking to him, and he said, listen, he said, there is, you know, there's nothing more important than parenthood. But it's so, so difficult. I think we need to turn around now and to honour parenthood as well at this time. And so I think that Tuesday can be a great day for that, as I say, visiting young parents and letting them off maybe for 3 hours while you're minding the little ones.
They would love. Catherine, I know that this tradition has evolved over time and a little bit like St. Bridget's Day as well. And then we've International Women's Day in March, and nearly getting one for each month at this stage. But it has evolved and has been embraced anew by younger generations who perhaps, I think, you know, interpreted in a different way. Did the concept of Nullagnamán ever offend you in any way, or perhaps maybe how its earlier iterations?
I think anything that is celebrated within a community that comes out of folk tradition and folklore absolutely has to adapt. To the times. And so I don't think it ever offended me. I think it probably did have its place when women were doing the majority of the domestic labour, and it probably was nice to get a day off. But I think you're right that we've moved on from there, even though I don't think we're quite there 100% 50-50, but like we've got more of a way to go. But I think if it adapts and changes to be more about, I suppose, recognising, you know, the importance of, as I said, kind of female solidarity, getting together, creating those spaces for women, then I think it's incredibly important. And it would be a mistake to dismiss the power of that, I think, today.
And like, I mean, on Tuesday, and probably even today, when people have time, it could be Andrea C. Swims, it's readings. For others, it could be long lunches stretching into a late night. And some of the criticism, I think, is around the people saying, well, is this just being commercialised, you know, and as a way for restaurants to fill up, you know, an evening.
Sure, everything is being commercialised now. How can you step away from that? But I think what it is being used for more and more is highlighting issues that women are facing. And I think people like Women's Aid are stepping in, the Women's Council of Ireland, and who are raising the issues that we need to tackle to make it a more just and equal and equitable society, as opposed to just we're here with our glasses of wine having a ball. So I think absolutely celebrating the power of women is intrinsic to the day, but it also is about, okay, well, where are we falling down and how can we make the moves to get more equitable?
And Catherine, it has been sort of reclaimed, I suppose it's one of the good things about the tradition, by different parts of society. So as you have mentioned, Noreen, it's been reclaimed as a spiritual dimension for many people. But look, I mean, the arts have really stepped up to put their own particular, I suppose, reclamation of the day as well, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, you'll see it celebrated in places like, you know, the Irish Writers' Centre, creating those spaces for female writers to get out and to kind of talk about their work. And the same, I think, with St. Bridget's Day. I think right now in Ireland, we have so many amazing creatives, so many amazing women who are creating amazing things. And I think, again, like if we have this space and we're able to shift the meaning of it to be more empowering to talk about issues that we want to talk about, like it would be.
Did it surprise you, Catherine, that in an arguably post-Catholic Ireland that we so willingly embraced a feast day for Bridget?
It's interesting because I think, I mean, the celebration of St. Bridget's Day today, you know, has absolutely nothing really to do with the saint as she exists.
And of course, there are different interpretations.
There are many different interpretations, but I suppose if
which
you're
Bridget?
Well, indeed, the hagiography or whatever would dictate certain things. And I think, again, what we've seen is an opportunity that can be seized upon and to kind of, you know, create a rival to St. Patrick's Day, nearly, which I think is kind of cool.
I think we've a little way to go, because St. Bridget's Day, it's celebrated on the Monday after, whereas St. Patrick's Day, no matter when it falls. So I think we've a small bit more to give her parity.
Of course, she was so powerful that the early church had to adopt her, had to bring her in. Lots of our listeners phoning in and sending in their messages saying, Miriam says, I'm 76 and in my home, my father always prepared all of Christmas with my mother. He also always cooked Sunday lunch, which was dinner at the time. Nowadays, young couples are both working, often both working full time, and it's essential that both share the load. Dara says, lovely to hear a discussion on Nullagnamán. It's a great favourite from childhood in our house. Household goose is in the fridge, pudding ready to go, pastry ready for the mince pies, 12 people coming for full Christmas dinner on Tuesday. Well done, Dara. Five of us lads to look after the 7 lassies. What I kind of like about it, Andrea, is that, you know, compared to International Women's Day or other kind of celebrations, it is a uniquely Irish experience. And I love sharing that tradition with people who are not from here, who just think it's a fantastic idea.
Absolutely. And I suppose without going into the what it is to be Irish anymore, it's kind of evolving all the time, and it does come from a historical place. And the thing I love about it is that it is pagan as opposed to Christian. And I think you talk about a post-Catholic Ireland, and as we see maybe the rise of religion coming back through certain areas, keeping it into a thing that celebrates all women as opposed to a certain segment is very important.
Can I ask you, Noreen, just about... because whether you like it or loathe it, it does afford us Nollag Na Mban every year to have a look at the role and status of women around the world, not just here. Mm. How do you kind of rate or look at female solidarity now, particularly within the Catholic Church, which, to the disappointment of many on this island, shut the door to female deacons, you know, and there was strong support when they did the synod here for that.
Absolutely, Darvel. Again, they missed the boat. And it's a disgrace. And we don't really want to go down that road, because it's so cliched now. And there is no denying it, that they have these men, you know, due to misogyny, homophobia, they're all buried under the floorboards of Rome, and they rear their ugly head. But now we've moved away, you see. And even though we're not leaving, you know, many people have thought with my ordination that I left the Christian church, but I didn't, because, you know, they're just wonderful, including Nollag Na Mban and the Epiphany coming up on Tuesday. And so I want to sing you a little song, actually, from just one verse of a song, actually, because you were talking, you asked Andrea about
this
the Irish connection.
Surprise. And you've got the
and so
box.
This is a carol from the Kilmore Wexford tradition, where they celebrate on next, it's called the 12th Day Carol. And I'll just sing you the first verse.
Take
because
it, away.
It outlines those three miracles I've been talking about. Now to conclude our Christmas mirth with one that deserves attention, we will end our songs on our Saviour's birth with one that deserves attention. Three great wonders fell on this day. A star led kings where the infant lay. Water made wine in Galilee. And Christ was baptized in Jordan.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Not how I expected my Sunday. What a treat.
So, Catherine, what is your little thing you're going to perform? I'm joking. You are Catherine Prosiska, an unapologetic feminist of the left variety, I think would be fair to say. Is there a risk that, and Andrea just been mentioning it, that sort of there can be a return to conservatism in some quarters? There's definitely evidence, particularly in the US, but elsewhere, of men and women sort of moving apart in terms of their political ideology. Is there a risk that Nollag Na Mban throws us back into a so-called trad wife territory?
No, I don't think so. I think what we're seeing is a lot of very strange movements online that are saying they are returning to some kind of traditional conservative values, but really what they're doing is creating new values whole cloth and kind of selling them back to us. Like, I don't think the trad wife has all that much to do with traditionally what wives were doing, you know? But I think what we're seeing, and particularly online, particularly in the US, is kind of a backlash against modern feminism from about the mid-2010s, saying, I don't know, maybe it's gone too far or too quickly or whatever it is. And it's kind of coming at a time where the architecture of feminism has kind of been dismantled. So it's no longer necessarily about the advancement of, you know, a community or kind of empowerment of all, but rather this individual empowerment, which I think is quite corrosive because it's hard to name. And actually, I think Nollag Na Mban kind of stands against that, saying, no, we're coming together, actually. So I don't think we should let them have it. You know, it's not theirs.
Andrea, can I ask you, and I mentioned International Women's Day earlier, which I think in some senses may have reached a bit of a peak in terms of those, you know, we'd seen very, very big, you know, venues hosting, you know, lots of women. And there was a lot of critique saying this is about celebrating a certain type of woman, namely, you know, the white woman working full time in a certain kind of class. So there's a bit of a backlash against that. And, you know, I'm just wondering, is Catherine right that maybe there are risks in that? Or how do we even define what female solidarity looks like or should look like? Like, is there enough solidarity, particularly when, you know, you're looking at migrants, you know, different ethnicities, women in, you know, who are less wealthy than others? Is there enough of that?
I think it's very hard to bring half the population onto one platform. But I think in terms of the solidarity, it's going to become much more important, because talking about the Tradwives stuff is rooted in Project 2025 and the architecture of pronatalism, etc., rising here. And as this kind of infiltrates Ireland and Europe, which Steve Bannon has obviously started talking about
earlier,
how he's got his eyes, he's working already in setting up these parties that focus on diminishing women's rights, taking away our bodily autonomy. And unless we are all working in solidarity to work against these really powerful men who have made it happen in America. We've seen what has happened with Roe versus Wade. We've seen what has happened with the rise of the Tradwife, which is not by accident. It is coming true. We've seen but then you have like Charlie Kirk's death and Erica Kirk's rise as this woman who seems to be taking over. So there's loads of different streams of the type of woman that are powerful or have their power, etc. But I think we all have to come together in solidarity to be like, we're actually not going to be ruled by this kind of...
Catherine, can I ask you, you know, yesterday we had Professor Shane Higgins, who's the former master of the National Maternity Hospital, and we were talking about birth rates and fertility rates and the age at which, you know, Irish women and men are having children. And, you know, even just how that, the whole fertility thing has become so ideological and so politicised. How do we support women and men through this moment?
I mean, I think it is, again, quite a dangerous moment that's tied up in a lot of misogyny and racism, really. Yeah. And I fear that if we don't kind of take control over it, then it'll just be used against us. But I think the primary, I don't know, barrier to maybe having kids is simply cost of living, cost of housing. You know, still women are kind of faced with the choice of, oh, career or children, you know, in a way that men aren't ever. And I think with the housing crisis, say, you know, I'm 29 now. I moved out of my parents' house at about 26, 27.
Lucky.
I'm very lucky, you know, but I feel like if I'm only starting my adult life then, you know, everything kind of gets delayed and delayed and delayed. And that's the real issue here. Like, it's not necessarily ideological in the sense of, you know, how do we force women to have more kids, whether they want it to be? It's how do we make having kids affordable for everybody, and how do we make it so it's not always the woman who has to bear the cost of it, really?
Yeah. And also much more than, I suppose, there was pragmatics too, which I really take on board. But it's making parenthood, it's, you know, it's withdrawing the negativity around parenthood, which stems from fear, really, fear of not having houses, not having money, and they're all legitimate, I do say that. But I think that, you know, I stand beside people, of course, getting married, because I'm a solemnizer. And so many couples will say to me, no children, not having any children. And then maybe 3 years later, I might get a call, will you name our little baby? And then you go along to them and they will say to you then, you know, yes, we have, you know, you go through terrible sleepless nights, worries and so on. I think, who was it that said, insanity is hereditary, we get it from our children. So there's a truth to it. But, you know, I think if we can turn that around to the grace that is there, and careers, you end careers, you retire from. Motherhood, you never do. And that it's, if we can just turn that around a little.
Lots of response from our listeners. One said, think of the women in Afghanistan and Iran on the 6th of January. So many countries where women are sadly treated and so inferior. And that is so true. Can I ask you, Catherine, you know, you look at our membership of the European Union, which is widely credited in ushering in those big legal changes that have benefited women. What do you think are the barriers, structural or cultural, that still remain?
I think it's interesting because a lot of the structural barriers have on paper been dealt with, but are maybe being enforced socially in other ways. Or, you know, again, that type of stuff that you see online, those kind of corrosive narratives that are slowly coming back about gender roles, about the role of a woman, about the role of a man, all of those different things, they're very difficult to fight, I think. So I don't even know, I suppose, what kind of policy we could have to combat, like, small moments of sexism that we all face every day in our lives. But I think it has something to do with maybe lack of moderation of content online, the things people are being exposed to, the ubiquity of porn online that, like, men are seeing all of the time.
Men undressing us on Grok.
Grok, yeah. Well, I mean, like, the AI question of what is AI for, and now everything is allowing sexual content. I think those are massive issues. And, you know, how do we fight that? Because that's just an individual asking an AI chatbot to do something, you know?
Andrea, how do we fight that? It was really interesting listening, you know, to the Archbishop of Ireland, Eamon Martin, expressing concerns recently that social media may be influencing people to come to conversations and relationships as if they're armed for battle. And he was talking about a category of men who are professing to be Christian and kind of go into this kind of warrior mode online. But in fact, a lot of it is just old fashioned
misogyny. Yeah. I've been fascinated with watching the rise of Christian nationalism flooding into Ireland, and we, especially with young men who are putting Psalms in their Instagram bios, and the Purple Cross, and the social media rise of Christianity, Christian nationalism as opposed to maybe Christian Catholicism is definitely being noticed. But it definitely feels like this is a way in to bring back the way of male dominance and to re-empower those structures that we've fought for so long to find our power as women. And I think it's going to be a very interesting time as this rolls out and as the US power players have set their sights on Ireland as a target for a way into changing Europe, I suppose. And the fact that that Steve Bannon is coming out and saying that Ireland is first is really worrying. And I think with the rise of the social media Christian bros coming through, I just don't know how you fight that back. Like, because the powers that run those social media networks have all turned to this Christian nationalism. Like, Elon has become Christian, culturally Christian. The head of Palantir has. They're all kind of moving into this space. So to me, the warning signs are going off, and I'm like, who is going to control this?
Yeah. And Noreen, how are we going to improve kind of that harmony between the sexes if there is a diversion, as a lot of studies, political studies have shown?
Well, I think worldwide, actually, Derval, it's the dearth of the spiritual, not the spiritual that you're talking about, but it's that we don't have no anchor anymore to something that's outside of ourselves, to a higher power, whatever you'll call it there. And I see that very much in line. And yes, it's happening on another level, actually, on another good level, Andrea, I think, in our country as well, which is in tandem with the Irish language coming back. People are so interested now in the Gaeilge, you know, and it's wonderful gatherings of groups and no grammar and just speak to me. Yeah. And so I think that's very important. But I think Ireland is a great country too, from the point of view of the feminine, with our three presidents, which are just in. When you look worldwide, do you see a woman? Not at all. You know, all the war-torn zones, the women are absent. They're not absent in losing their children and losing their lives, but they're absent in making decisions.
Catherine, as Tuesday beckons, who are your biggest female influences? Who will you be commemorating or celebrating with on Tuesday?
Well, different types of influences. I'd say my mother. She'd be delighted if I said that on radio, you know, but she's shaped me probably in more ways than I can say. Taylor Swift, I would say. I think she's.
Your mum would be even more delighted to be up there,
you know,
with Taylor Swift.
And then I don't know. It's hard to name just one, but maybe like I love the poetry of Van Boland. So I'll be thinking of her. Yeah. Annie Ernaux, many female writers.
Mm. What will you be doing, Andrea? Will you be celebrating?
Do you know what? I haven't even thought about Tuesday. I can't think into the next week. I'm in like the mid-Christmas mode still.
You're still
in Sunday. But in terms of celebrating people, I would always think of like Alva Smith, who led Repeal, but who was one of these people who was able to make everyone feel important and that what they were doing was right and brought everyone together. And I think that's something, the soft power of women that we can celebrate.
And still has incredible energy going into her 80th
like
year.
She's phenomenal. But like, and like the likes of Maeve O'Rourke, who like the people who are doing the work and don't need the platform or the celebration, I think is always important. And then like, we always think of celebrating women who are extraordinary, but like the ordinary everyday woman, I think it deserves a celebration of like someone who's kind, someone who brings people together, someone who serves a lovely Cremant. Yeah.
Yeah. Will you get to see little Nora on Tuesday, Noreen?
Oh no, because she's in Buffalo, upstate New York. But you know, talking about that, I think that's so important for us to celebrate on Tuesday. The carers who won't be able to go out. The nuns who educated, particularly my generation. They were, I mean, there was the dark side, the dark side to all of us. But they were just wonderful women too, those nuns that educated us. And I'd also think of Sinead O'Connor. Actually, this time I think she'd love to be sitting in this fourth chair here, and we'd never end the programme if she was.
Well, but we kept that fourth chair free for all who cannot be with us today and to celebrate. And we look forward to future celebrations, Nollag na Mann's in Buffalo, when little Nora embraces the tradition. But thank you so much to Catherine Prosipka, novelist, to Dr. Noor Noreen, fantastic spiritual singer, as we've heard, and Andrea Horn, founder of Topical Popical. And we wish you a great day on Tuesday to honouring our mums, our sisters, our daughters and friends, and to the men who honour them as well. We wish you a very, very happy Nollag na Mann, and we'll take a quick break.
And to you too, Daryl.
Thank you.